Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome everybody to our latest Outsports podcast. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by AT&T, mobilizing your world. This is Sid Ziegler with Jim Buzinski, both here in sunny but chilly Los Angeles. I have friends in town from Massachusetts, and even they said it feels cold in LA. So Jim, I don't feel like too much of a wimp saying it's chilly out.
December is always the coldest month in LA every year.
When my heating bill goes up in January as well.
But so you must be all geeked out. Your Star Wars is coming tonight. Do you get tickets?
I had tickets two months ago.
And where are you seeing it?
The Cinerama Dome. In 3D, I'm a little wary of the 3D, but
oh really? I would get nauseous. So.
Well, we got seats right up front in the, I think the third or fourth row, but in the Cinerama Dome, the first row is a good 50 feet back from the screen, so there really is not a bad seat in the house. But
what time?
I'm excited. 10:30 at night. They're showing it in the Cinerama Dome every half hour for 72 hours. So you could go on Sunday morning at 4:30 a.m. and there's a showing.
You mean at the ArcLight, right? I mean the Cinerama. Can't be showing it at the Cinerama Dome because it would overlap.
The ArcLight. Well, yeah. Right. Yeah. The Cinerama Dome is just part of the ArcLight, which is a larger complex. But it's been crazy to see how much the sports media and everybody is going bonkers over Star Wars. I mean, everyone is doing Star Wars themed posts and articles and videos, and it really is. It is kind of a phenomenon. It was, from what I've heard, the biggest premiere ever on Hollywood Boulevard, and they had three theaters. There are two huge theaters right there, and then they rented out one more. So it's kind of a big thing that Jim could not care less about.
Well, I only saw one Star Wars movie, and that was the one with Jar Jar Binks, and it was so lousy I decided, I don't get the...
Literally the worst one ever made.
Which is what I was told. I saw it'd be like showing someone a comedy reel. Oh, this is a great comedy. You have to watch it, and they think, oh, my God, the show's terrible. So,
yeah.
I might go to see it. I go to see a movie with friends every New Year's Eve, and I won't veto it, so...
It's getting... And it has a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes, which is really high. That means that the critics are liking it. And I've talked to Jason Collins. I messaged with him to ask him how it was, because he was at the premiere, and he said it's awesome. He said it's awesome. He said there's a lot of humor in it. So, it sounds like they really hit the tone of the first three movies, and... I just can't wait. But here we are. It's almost we've turned into Grantland, being a sports site talking about everything but sports. we do have a lot to talk about actually today. There's been a lot of great stuff happening. Usually, as we approach the holidays, we kind of start winding down some content. But we've had a lot of great stuff. And one of the themes that I wanted to talk about today was this idea of living an open secret in sports. We had three men in sports, pro sports, come out this week. We have Kurt Miller, the new head coach of the Connecticut Sun and the WNBA. We have Bill Kennedy, the NBA referee, and Eric Braverman, the LA Dodgers executive. And it's interesting to me, Jim, with each one of these, is each one of them, many of their colleagues knew they were gay. Obviously, they had relationships. They had circles of friends that knew they were gay. But the general public and the media didn't, and I know in Kurt and Eric's case, they had people asking them a number of times, and they were always like, "I don't really want to now." So it's funny, as I was writing Kurt's story, I kept saying, publicly out, and he's like, "Well, I was publicly out. I mean, people knew, the public knew, just the media didn't." And I started wondering, like, is there a is there a better term for us to start using than publicly out? Because these guys were kind of publicly out. Like many of them, many people who knew them were like, that was not a secret.
No, I mean, I disagree only in the sense that for we mean publicly out that if you could have, you know, done a Google search or had something written about them, and if because there are like Dale Scott could claim he was publicly out as an umpire because everybody knew his, you know, people in a circle knew it wasn't a secret, but until it was the story was told publicly, nobody really knew, and it didn't have an impact that Eric had by actually telling a story to a media outlet. So I think that's the difference. I would say someone could be out openly gay, but not publicly out. So I mean, it's not really splitting hairs, but it's sort of I think what exactly the definition to me means.
Well, you know what? I know certainly in Kurt and Eric's case, and we haven't talked to Bill Kennedy yet. He shared his story with Yahoo Sports. But I know in each of their case, they both knew that it was important to tell their story publicly. They both identified long ago that it was important for them to do so, but they were still reticent to do so. And it's been interesting for me talking with both of them over the years, this kind of yin and yang and trying to find the right time. And that's kind of, you know, how I started the article about Kurt. It's like, it's never been the quote unquote right time. And it's just interesting that these guys are, even though they're totally out and they know they'll be totally accepted, they're still looking for the quote unquote right time to tell their story.
Well, I think the question, if you kind of wait for the right time, there may never be a right time in somebody's mind. I mean, probably in Eric's case, I'm guessing after the season was more of the right time because there, you know, it's not happening while the season's in progress. For Bill Kennedy, the right time was that he was called a faggot on the court by Rajon Rondo and basically decided, all right, I'm going to tell the world what everybody kind of knows. Yeah, I mean, I always found that right time would be a little bit of a dodge because you could always find an excuse not to do something. But in you know, in their cases, you know, they finally told their story, and Kurt, you know, getting the job with the WNBA team is great because he's going to be known from day one as, you know, an openly gay coach in pro sports, which I think he's the first, right, the first man?
Yeah, well, he's been with the Sparks, LA Sparks, for the last year, but as an assistant coach, and so he's as far as we know, he's the first man ever hired who's openly gay as the head coach of a pro sports team. I mean, I don't know if anybody else, do you?
Clearly nobody in, you know, NBA, NHL, baseball, basketball, or soccer, no. I mean, that'd be, if you're looking at the pro sport, no, I would say no, and we would have known these other coaches anyway. So, yeah, he would be the first.
So, you know, I think it's interesting to kind of have a conversation about why do this. Like, you know, as you're talking with people like a Dale Scott, right? So who was out to people and umpiring, out to his friends. He had a long-time relationship. Why come out publicly? What's the argument that you make when you talk to people like Dale? Do you have to make that argument, or do they already? Is it already?
Well, in Dale's case, it was a bit odd because he had a picture of himself and his partner in a referee magazine with a caption. So he technically was already out, even though like nobody saw the article. You know, even I think you get referee magazine and you overlooked it because you had to read the caption. It wasn't even in the story itself. So I approached him as saying, "You're out, basically. So I'm going to write something, and I'd like to do it with your cooperation." He was fantastic. It wasn't until after the fact that his attitudes changed because he was getting email from all sorts of people, not just, you know, people in sports, people in other professions, were cops, firefighters, thanking him for being a role model, thanking him for doing this, thanking him for showing it's the way. And that really sort of, in his mind, crystallized why it's important that if you're in a position where it's not going to, you know, impact your job security, you know, and you're able to do it, that you have an obligation now. I think he's even used that word with me because it makes a difference. I mean, there was a 17-year-old kid in Southern California who wants to be an umpire, and he's gay, and he thought he would leave that track because it was not possible to be a gay umpire. And then when he saw Dale's story, it was like, oh, well, maybe I won't be good enough, but I know my sexual orientation won't hinder me. That's why it's important, and that's what I tell people when I encourage them, that you are going to make a difference. And Michael Martin, the soccer player from West Virginia, who we wrote about a couple, or actually wrote a couple things for us, he sent me a text yesterday from one of his, they have these traveling teams and, you know, these sports and soccer, who was always, he said, send a text that I used to preach against the gays. And then he knew Michael was out, and just like it changed his views on it. And it was like Michael said, he was crying because him being publicly out changed this one person's mind. And we hear it from everybody. Every time we do a story or we help someone do a story, what do they say? Oh, my God, the response I got was amazing. People said it made a difference. So that's the argument I would make, that being out in your own circle is fine for you, but why not do it so you can make a difference? Eric Braverman's going to make a difference. Kurt Miller, they're all going to make a difference because people will see it's possible. That's the argument I make to them.
Well, yeah, and Eric talked specifically about that, how he was when he was a kid. This was a while ago, but he thought he remembered thinking, well, I guess I can't work in sports if I'm gay, and then he kind of ended up in LA working for ABC Radio and kind of crept back into sports, and that's certainly why he did it and why Kurt Miller did it. And I mean, Kurt, you know, expressed some regret to me that it's taken him so long, that he was a head coach at a couple of Division I colleges, and he didn't take the opportunity then. And it's so often these people, they know why they need to do it, because they were those kids with no role models when they were growing up, no role models in sports. And, I mean, every single time, their only regret is that they didn't do it sooner. I mean, have you ever in the last 15 years talked to an athlete or a coach or anybody who came out publicly on Outsports or otherwise who regretted doing it? Have you talked to one person?
No, nobody. And they've all been just thrilled by the response. And universally, when I write, I always kind of write back, check in, you're glad you did the story. It's, oh my God, I got so much response. My phone's blowing up. My phone died. I got so many messages. You hear that all the time because people sort of appreciate their bravery, for want of a better word, and their courage. And it's somebody who did it. They're all blending together. But someone said they heard from a priest in the Vatican, a closeted gay priest, how his story inspired him. Someone last week said, oh, I got a message from someone in Paraguay. You know, like, they're reaching people in parts of the world that they never would have dreamed they would have reached. And that to them is so cool. And, yeah, so no one has ever, you know, regretted having done it.
Yeah, the only one who, I don't know if he regrets it, Michael Sam. I think that the timing of that and how things unfolded, I think it's interesting how that happened. I think it's a complicated story.
Yeah, it's almost on a different level, though, meaning, you know, that was, I think in some ways we're talking about, you know, when we work with people, we work with them in a very, you know, Michael Sam was just on a totally different level with the media and the NFL. And, yeah, he'll never know, really. And that's, I think, the sad part for Michael is, you know, would he have, and we can have opinions, but, you know, would he still be in the NFL if he had not come out? But, But other than Michael, I don't know of anybody.
If you want to weigh in on this or anything else we're talking about, we're at 347-945-7834, 347-945-7834. The interesting piece, Bill Kennedy coming out on Monday, was super interesting and a surprise to both of us. But the most interesting piece to me was to kind of go back now and look at how the NBA and Rajon Rondo himself handled this. And from my perspective in this whole story, Bill Kennedy looks great and everybody else looks like crap. Well, I mean, Rajon Rondo, you know, from my perspective, his first statement afterward was a non-apology, and we kind of chronicled how it was copied and pasted from an old Kobe Bryant apology, which is just terrible. I mean, you do something and then 10 days later, that's all you can muster. The NBA giving him only a one-game suspension. And then Adam Silver saying, well, one of the reasons it was only one game was because I didn't want anybody asking questions about Bill Kennedy's sexual orientation. So I thought the whole thing makes everybody, and in particular, the NBA and the commissioner look pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, the excuse by Silver is a really weird sort of justification for giving him what I thought was a light penalty. I mean, Tony Kornheiser on the pardon interruption show on ESPN thought should have got three games, which is interesting when you look at the evolution of those two because they're on all the time. Years ago, they never used to be all that bothered by the homophobia in sports, and now they're both like, you know, basically throw the book at them. So I think that's a sign of education. But, I mean, Rondo, it wasn't much of an apology. I mean, you know, I'm surprised he, you know, didn't at least he probably took out David Stern and changed it to Adam Silver in the apology. That would have been a little more glaring. But his apology was almost word for word what Kobe issued in 2011 when he said something similar to a referee. And, you know, he didn't have the balls to face the media. To me, if you're going to do that, you go out, you go to talk to reporters, and you simply let them ask you as many questions as you want to, and you get it out of there. And then it's like, oh, it doesn't show my what I really feel about LGBT people. But he knew Bill Kennedy was gay, and he chose to use that slur, and he used it, and he went and attacked him verbally. I mean, he kind of went after him. I wasn't just simply said as he was walking by him. So, yeah, the NBA handled it very poorly. They gave him, I thought, an easy punishment. Rondo handled it terribly, and Kennedy, to his credit, you know, basically said, yeah, this is who I am, and I'm proud of it. I know he had talked to Jason Collins, Jason had told you, and he had talked to Dale Scott. They know each other, and Kennedy doesn't want to do any interviews, at least during the season, so probably the next time we'll hear from him will be next summer. But, yeah, I was really sort of disappointed in how the NBA handled it. And they could have talked to Bill Kennedy, and they could have said, you know, if we're asked this, you know, they could have said that. Hey, we want to give him more, but this might mean that we have to sort of let people know what he said. And my guess is Bill Kennedy said, go right ahead. I'm fine with that. You know, that's a lame excuse to me.
Right.
That we didn't want to somehow.
And it speaks to, I just think how weakly really all of these leagues, except for maybe Major League Baseball, I think they have. I think Billy Beane and Wendy Lewis have given them a better grasp on how to really end homophobia in their sport or really tackle it. But I think particularly the rest of the leagues, you know, they want to bring in a speaker to talk to the rookies, and they want to fly somebody around to a couple teams to talk to front offices, and they want to have a policy, and that's about it. They don't want to actually get their hands dirty. They don't want to actually do what they need to do that is encouraging more people to come out in their sport. And I thought that Adam Silver's response really indicated that. Instead of, I mean, he just sat there in his office afraid that something might happen and Bill Kennedy might get outed or somebody might ask questions, instead of just calling Bill and saying, hey, can we chat about this for a second? This is what we want to do. We want to make a big statement. And we really would like you on board if you're okay with that. He didn't go that route. And that's just so – I really think that it shows a lack of commitment to this issue on behalf of the NBA.
And it still shows this almost still idea that, oh, my God, there's something bad about this, that, you know, revealing this would be some kind of terrible thing. Where, again, if he had simply talked to Bill, and if Bill had said – I don't want this public, then that's different. But I'm certain he would have said, yeah, by all means, because he talked to Yahoo about exactly that 2 days later after he was suspended. So it was a really lame excuse, and they could have simply asked an employee. Which is why it's so funny, because when we talked to Dale after the season on our podcast, he heard nothing negative the entire season. It was like such a non-story. And so I thought also how it'll be for everybody. And then, of course, you have, you know, the Bill Kennedy thing. And I'm curious if Bill Kennedy had been publicly out before then, if Rondo would have said the same thing.
If
you know what I
mean?
The idea that
out?
You have a you have someone who's publicly identified. The media would, of course, written about him. Would Rondo have gone that? And did Rondo go that way because he felt, in a sense, I could kind of get him?
Yeah, well, I think that we've said many times that coming out actually offers you protections, because if you're out and you and something happens, boy, the media and the public are going to react in a particular way, and that will make people shy away from doing that kind of stuff. So I would be shocked if Bill had been publicly out already, and that if Rondo would do that, that I would be shocked. But you're right.
Well, because, you know, what happens then? They suspend Rondo. and then people know, oh, it was Bill Kennedy. People would have asked the very first question, did he say something anti-gay? It would have led to a lot more of a discussion versus what it was a two-paragraph AP announcement that Rondo was suspended. And, of course, they didn't give a reason because nobody said a reason. So, in a sense, I think Rondo was probably thinking, oh, I could hit this guy where it hurts, and if his secret, his terrible secret is revealed, I'll even get him even more. And, you know, so.
Well,
but Bill, yeah, Bill's the only one who came out looking good.
Yeah, and now Rajon Rondo looks like a total jerk.
Well, we gave him one of our awards.
That's right. Well, we gave him, speaking of which, we Rajon Rondo earned one of our year-end awards. Can we say that word on the podcast?
Well, if we have it on our headline, I guess, yeah, you can say asshole on a podcast.
Okay, well, Rajon Rondo is one of our two assholes of the year. And, I you know, some people might say, oh, you just did that because it's a current story and it was fresh in your mind. Well, Jim and I give this kind of stuff quite a bit of thought, and we might make a mistake from time to time, but we both felt that given where this happened in the workplace, that Rajon Rondo is beyond what Kobe did, just throwing the word at some random referee, that this was directed at an actual gay referee whom he, in all likelihood, knew was gay. And then the apology was so, it was even more lame than Kobe's, because at least somebody in Kobe's team created something original. Rajon and his team just copy and pasted somebody else's non-apology, which had been criticized 4 years ago. So for us, Rajon Rondo was one of the two biggest assholes in sports this year.
The other being Lance Berkman of the Houston Astros for his fight against the LGBT ordinance in Houston.
And ultimately, you know, I think what Berkman did was worse. But given where what Rondo did, where it happened, and who was directed to, and sports site, we decided to give them co-MVP.
Well, and plus you're going to have you could have this happening more often when there are more out people in sports. So I think this is sort of a template for how this should not be handled in the future. Yeah, so I think the award is well deserved. But yeah, we do think about this. We gave out three awards so far, and three more are coming. We'll talk about them more next week. But yeah, the Berkman one was easy, and then Rondo. I said, well, we have a co-winner.
I don't even like giving a co anything, but this time around, it deserved it. Though we did have co female athletes of the year, but they're tied at the hip. Megan Rapinoe and Abby Wambach. I think their legacy, given they're both being out lesbians and both on the U.S. national team at the same time, and I think they'll forever be connected in their names in that way. So I get, you know, yes, they're co-athletes of the year, but I don't know. It just feels different. They feel like one. They feel like almost a team. Like we're giving it to a small two-person team.
Yeah, and that was such a high-profile event. I mean, it was the largest audience ever for a soccer game in the U.S., men or women, their World Cup final against Japan. And, you know, they're both Megan's engaged, Abby's married. And, and the searches we got during that entire event for things involving Megan and Abby were almost like sort of combined searches a lot. People were searching for news about open lesbians in the World Cup. And so they were two of the most prominent ones on the team that won. So I think that was an easy call for us.
Well, and they, stories we did about them, I think, you know, we're counting down the top 30 most read stories of the year this month. And I think we have the final 17 left to go. At least two of those top 17 stories of the year involved one or both of these players. So, you know, I think we had this debate and conversation around the World Cup when people would say, oh, well, no one's interested in women's sports. Well, we got a lot of traffic because we were covering these two women and other out LGBT people in the Women's World Cup. So I think, you know, yeah, for how all the attention that they brought to women's sports, and for that massive TV audience, these two earned it. Plus, I mean, you know, it was Wambach's kind of final farewell, and whether Rapinoe will probably be in the Olympics next year, yeah?
Well, she's injured, but I assume she'll heal from that.
The
Olympics
are
next year.
Her ACL?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad. Well,
yeah,
she
tweeted to, I think, Thomas Rawls of the Seahawks, you want to rehab together because he got injured last week for Seattle,
yeah.
So he's out.
And the final award that we've given out so far is Male Athlete of the Year. And pairs figure skater Eric Radford, who won a world championship. And, you know, if you know his story, I mean, he wasn't even really an ice skater like 8 years ago. I mean, he certainly wasn't a pairs figure skater up until a few years ago. And he just kind of, you know, he was a natural who's obviously gone to the pinnacle of his career in a couple of years. He'll have a shot at an Olympic gold medal. But we heard from a couple of people upset that we would give this to a figure skater that you should have given it to someone of a more masculine sport.
Like who?
And I thought, what's that?
Who are they thinking we should have given it to?
I don't know. They said there are other gay world champions this year. But, I mean, was Gus Kenworthy a world champion?
Gus was,
this year?
But the reason we didn't give it to Gus is Gus was not yet out when he won that. And I think that was the big difference with Eric. Eric had come out in November. Since coming out, he and his partner, Megan Duhamel, had not lost at all until this past weekend. They had won 9 consecutive Grand Prix or World Championship events. Whereas Gus came out in October. So, yeah, you might argue that Gus might be a little more high profile, but he had not been out when he had won those things. So to retroactively give him that, I think, would have been a mistake. Whereas I think Eric was an easy call because he was already an out athlete. Now, Gus does fantastically this coming season. It, you know, could be different next year. But Gus got a runner-up, but not the main one, I think, specifically because he's only been out for 2 months.
Well, and let's be super clear. Eric Radford is more well-known than Gus Kenworthy. Period, end of story. Whether you,
I think
maybe
in the
U.S. States,
more people know Gus Kenworthy and the whole puppy thing. That's what I meant by, you know, more high profile.
But worldwide, worldwide, it's not even a contest. And besides Gus, nobody even, until he came out, nobody even remembered that it was Gus Kenworthy that did those, that brought those puppies from Sochi. And then, as we know, it wasn't even Gus, it was his boyfriend.
Yeah, it was a boyfriend. But regardless, Eric had been out while he won this, which I think is one of the things we were recognizing. It wasn't like him and his partner decided, oh, my God, we can't skate anymore. The judges are hating us. No, the judges clearly didn't penalize them because, I said, they had won 9 consecutive events until this past weekend when they won second.
Well, we have male and female heroes of the year still to go, and then outsports person of the year, which I'm sure I'm wary of having a poll to see who people think it's going to be. I don't like that.
Let's
we know who we want to pick it. What exactly?
Well, do not text Sid from 10 p.m. Pacific tonight until whenever. And if you send him a spoiler, he'll probably come personally to your house and break your leg. So
well,
enjoy your Star
Wars
with your boyhood friend. From...
Well, my phone will be on silent. Don't you worry about that. I'm in the fantasy football semifinals, so I hope Todd Gurley runs for 300 yards and 7 touchdowns tonight. That's all the time we have.
Yeah, and you're playing your brother, so good luck.
That's right. Play my brother. Podcast brought to you by AT&T, mobilizing the world. We will talk to you next time.